Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is your host, David Murphy, from the National Black Unity News. Welcome to our simulcast. We are live on Facebook, Blog Talk Radio. We also in certain groups on Facebook. And, of course, we're on the Zoom call. We have several people with us this evening as they chiming in. We have Mr. Bill Gooden with us, Mr. Bill Curtis, Bernard Streeter, Michael Thomas, Dr. Ali, and Brother Satavi Jahi. And I just want to share a little information about the National Black Unity News before we get started with our program. The National Black Unity News is a nationwide circulated black periodical. It's a quarterly publication, and it's designed for us and it's by us. And it's different from, matter of fact, from all the other newspapers that I'm familiar with, because this is a true collaboration of like-minded people who has come together. Not only did they bring their resources, they brought finances, they sharing their information with you and us. And so that's the uniqueness about us. But the bottom line is that we are self-supporting. You know, we're not beholden to anyone. You know, we're going to stay true to the cause, you know. So, again, that's the uniqueness of us. But, again, we support all black media. You know, some good and some is bad, but, you know, we own less than 1% of the media, so we need all the voices we can get. But we really need those voices that's who's going to benefit us. And so, as always, before we get started, I want to introduce you to a couple of people. One of our co-hosts is Mr. Michael Thomas and Brother Satavi Jahi. And before we get started, I'm going to just turn it over to Brother Jahi, because he always say, I like to start on a positive note, and he usually bring us great, good, positive information. Brother Satavi, you got it, sir.
Yes, sir. All right. Thank you, David. Good evening, everybody, and under the people that sound, under the sound of my voice. As we do every time we come on here, we do a reading from Daily Motivations, African American Success. And author of that book is Mr. Dennis Kimbrough. He's also the author of Think and Grow Rich and Black Choice. If anyone should be wealthy, we should be wealthy. So, that said, let's get into our reading for tonight. Excuse me. February 7th, the fabric of our lives. Remember, it's the little things that count. George Johnson, entrepreneur, is a quote from him. Most of us will never receive an Oscar or a Nobel Prize or a Congressional Medal of Honor or any. These awards are reserved for the elite few. Let's face it, there's only one Michael, either Jordan or Jackson. Although every child born in these United States has the same right to become president, and we saw that with Barack Obama, simple fact remains, only a handful will ever occupy the Oval Office. Nevertheless, we can all enjoy many of life's simplest pleasures, the little things that so many take for granted. Anyone can appreciate a pat on the back, a hug, a birthday kiss, a walk in the park, a get-well card, a sincere praise for a job well done. These small pleasures can also include a cozy fireplace on a cold winter's night, breakfast in bed, or taking in a beautiful sunset. Even greater enjoyments are available, such as freedom of speech, the right to vote for the candidate of your choice, freedom to worship. All of these, as well as many other simple pleasures, give us added enjoyment. There are so many things to be thankful for. If life's greatest rewards come your way, fine. Be grateful. But if they pass you by, don't fret. Just look around and begin to enjoy the small things. These things we will long cherish. Today might not be full of great pleasures, but it's full of little ones. You need only open your eyes with the smallest things to compromise the true fabric of our lives. I will take time today to enjoy life's simplest pleasures. And that's, you know, for those of us who are busy, you know, we need to take time. As my mother says, today is her birthday. And smell the roses. Because tomorrow is not promised to us. And just need to be mindful of all of those simplest things that life has in store for us so that we can enjoy this walk through life and be able to enjoy it, embrace it, and know that we had a job well done. That's it, David, back to you.
All right, thank you, sir. I truly appreciate that. And I want to bring in another one of our hosts, Mr. Michael Thomas, who deals with financial service, collaboration, partnerships. Brother Michael Thomas, how you doing? Want to share a few words before we get started, sir?
Good, good. Thank you, sir, David. Hope all is well. Thanks, everyone, for again showing up today. It is definitely necessary that someone shows up, you know, to stay connected, to carry forth the torch from which we have been given and to do better than what we've been doing. And I thank everyone
you are
for
muted.
Being
you can
such
mute or unmute
awesome
yourself
people to
by pressing
stay
star
tuned
six.
And to be advocates and voices and leaders for the Black community and for the Black empowerment and well-being of Black people. Thank you so much. Thank you so much. You're awesome and well needed.
All right, sir. I appreciate that. Well, here we are in February, and many consider this Black History Month. But, you know, a lot of people say, well, which I agree with them, that our history should be taught every day. And I want to share something with, you know, the significance of our past yesterday. And of course, we have to be concerned about today and tomorrow as well. But I heard a couple of interesting things. Say, me and Bill Gooden, we're one of the originators of a group called Black Men, Unifying Black Men. And we held our 94th consecutive breakfast at a Black facility called Terra Cafe. And quite a few brothers coming from different Black backgrounds come there. And one of the brothers from a place in Baltimore, matter of fact, they come from, they run this largest, I mean, not the largest, but the oldest Black men organization, Black men's club in the entire country called Art Social Club, based here in Baltimore. And one of the brothers was sharing me, he was talking about, you know, history. And he was saying, because he is the historian for the club. And he was explaining to me about the Civil War. And he was saying that Lincoln would have lost the war if he had not recruited those Black soldiers. But you know, most people don't talk about in history. He was saying that they put guns in the hands of Black people, rifles, guns, ammunition, and taught them how to kill. And that they did because they was angry. They was fighting for two. They was angry, and they wanted. They thought they was fighting for their freedom. And they did, like, you know, they fought tremendous. They fought for, you know, courage, you know, I mean, they just put it out there. But after the war was over, and I never thought about all this twist before, but they explained that even to this day, it's kind of, you know, rough to think about for some people, that you had a bunch of Black men who were ex-slaves and just get, you know, from slave, know how to kill and had guns. And so what do you think they did with those soldiers? Do you think they allowed them to walk around with the knowledge of how to kill a white man? And so, you know, it said, you know, and these are some of the things they don't talk about in our history, because he was explaining that they went on a mass thing to just about take all them soldiers out. And that's part of the history that they don't tell us. Because they could not allow Black men. And matter of fact, in their minds, and still to their mind, it's a crime for us to kill them. I don't care what the cause may be. But in any case, that's my opinion, and the brother made an interesting point. And I have, I met, I have not been knowing this brother for years. And he and I did an interview with him. His name is Mr. Bill Curtin. I'm asking him to unmute himself. And me and Mr. Curtin, we go a long way back. We got a history in this town ourselves. Cause we of that age now. We can say 40 years ago, 50 years ago. You had them old men used to talk. And now we at that stage. But he and I, he did some things for me way back in the day. Matter of fact, I used to have these hats, caps, and he put my first logo and stuff on my caps, and that's how I met him. But he and I crossed a lot of paths and a lot of the same people during those days. The days, people who I consider heroes, but a gentleman by the name, he was a publisher. He was the first person to take me under his wing. His name was Earl Coker. And he was a tough old gentleman, man. This guy, he didn't play around, And he was like crying out in the wilderness. He was telling us back then that agents and stuff was taking over our businesses and services. Evidently, we didn't pay too much attention to it. But that's exactly what happened. And then there was the Mr. Haysbert, Mr. Payne, and then there was everyday people that you don't hear about in our history. Now, we know about all the Frederick Douglass and the Carter G. Well, we know about a lot. But what about all of those heroes and sheroes that you never heard about? Because they didn't, they won't tell us our history. They wouldn't let us tell it to each other. That's why what we're doing today is extremely important, because now we can share our history. We can create our history today. But Mr. Bill Curtis is, he's the editor in the National Black Unity, the News, and he has a unique service. But I want him to tell you a little bit about what he does, who he is, and then we're going to have a little conversation about some flags and symbols and things like that. Brother Curtis, can you unmute yourself, sir?
Yes,
how are you doing today?
I'm okay, Mr. Murphy. How about yourself?
I'm still here, sir. And I'm still on the front line. But Mr. Curtis, tell a little bit about, a little bit about you and about the services you provide.
Okay. I can tell you a little bit, Mr. Murphy. When you mentioned them hats to me the other day, I know I've done things. I remember, I had a shop on West North Avenue. I sold promotional items. I still sell promotional items, imprinted items, pens, calendars, buttons, and other imprinted promotional items for your own marketing purposes. But I'm focused on, right now, the cultural items. I have a website up for that, which is www.rbg123.net. I'm not sure what you want me to speak to, Mr. Murphy. What are you asking me? I didn't know I'd be.
Yeah,
the format of this either. But I'm glad to be here. Thank you for inviting me.
No, we just have open conversations here. No format.
Okay, gotcha.
But let me just ask you this. Now, I interviewed you the other day. And we got on the subject of the flag that you sell. Can you explain a little bit about the red, black, and green flag a little bit?
Yeah. Most of us know about the flag. I'm sure everybody on this call knows about the red, black, and green Pan-African flag. Came out of Garvey back in 1920. I believe last year was their 100th year celebration of the creation of the flag. So most of us conscious people who are trying to do things, to do something, be it through your business, through your activism, through whatever you do. So in the conversation with Mr. Murphy, it came to me that I thought about this. I do sell the flag and other cultural items. I've sold the red, black, and green flag probably since about 2004. And my thing about the flag, I like the black stuff. Be I in a professional setting, which when I was in the work world, you know, with a suit and tie. I'm not going in there shouting "Lunga Black Power," but the flag and its representation, as I was sharing with Mr. Murphy, is a symbolic thing that I suspect most black people don't have, particularly many of us in the cultural community or in the business community. So we're, so what came to me in talking to him was that it's a symbol. It's a symbol that cuts across everybody's activism, business activism, good-heartedness, Christian good-heartedness, Muslim good-heartedness, whatever it is.
Oh, Bill.
Yeah? Who's that?
Hello. Okay, let's meet yourself, please. Okay, I appreciate you. Go ahead, brother.
Yeah, but that's how I see it, as a overarching symbol, a representation. Symbols are important. I don't think we put enough emphasis on symbols, mm-hmm. or let's throw out the word symbol. Now the thing is affirmations. Everybody's reprogramming their minds, right? We get up in the morning, you know, we like the opening, Brother Kimball. The gentleman read something from Kimball's book, which I have, and I met Kimball years back. He came to Baltimore to speak. Actually, my ex-wife was very involved in bringing him here or being a part of his organization. So we're all trying to reprogram ourselves, right? Everybody agree on that? You ain't got to nod. You ain't got to say anything. We're not in the same room. So, and I'm just getting down to Zoom stuff. I really would rather be in front of people. Okay. But we are on Zoom. An affirmation is a symbol. It's a symbolic thing you're trying to reprogram your head with. And we all have, as I have come to kind of admit to myself or self-criticize, self-criticism, we're all most of us are miseducated, even those of us that are in the conscious community. We're miseducated. But let me get back to the symbol part. I don't mean to be upsetting anybody, charging you with being miseducated. But we are. And it's a real thing. We need to admit it. The red, black, and green flag is the Pan-African flag. And that's what the Garvey Group called it. They don't call it the red, black, and green flag. They call it the Pan-African flag. They call it the flag of their, of the nation, of a government. Because the Garvey Group looked at itself as a government. You can self-declare a government in terms of international law. Now, let me just also say, I'm not in the Garvey Group. I'm not in the UNIA, although I do support their overarching philosophy, which is do for self, help yourself, be collective, share information, do business with each other, do business with black business. Well, like Claude Anderson has said, I heard him speak maybe about 2 years ago for the pandemic, a group in Baltimore called Reality Speaks brought him to town. And Claude Anderson said something like, buy black or sell to everybody. Buy black or sell to anybody, but buy black. Buy from each other. Buy from your own. Let me say, focus on this idea we talked about in terms of a representation of a symbol. Symbols help you to get anchored to what you say you're up to. So you can do it through affirmations. And affirmations, you know, positive affirmations, spiritual affirmations, New Thought Christianity affirmation, traditional Bible verses, they're all affirmations. But the red, black, and green flag should be something that we all can rally around. Just that. Now, I'm not saying, you know, put it up big and bold in your business. Customers might not appreciate it. But somewhere in your world and in your environment, you should, that representation of unity, cooperation, collectivism, doing for self, as we are all individually trying to do what we do, there needs to be something in our world that anchors us and to this idea of cooperation. Maybe that's why I'm even trying to be a little more involved in National Black News, the National Black Unity News. It's a collective effort. I like that kind of stuff. It just makes sense in this day and age. Despite our maniacal, like we're all maniacs. We're all individual maniacs. We're in Western civilization. It is imbued in us, imbued deeply. Whether we acknowledge it or not, is probably why, one of the reasons why we cannot declare a lot of victories. Our individualism, I think, that's my theory. I'm getting off point, though.
Okay, I'm gonna get back to the flag.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this. Let me just say this. And before we let Bill go, anybody, you know, because you know, when we were talking about symbolism, and I too, because I don't have a flag floating around here. I got all of this other stuff floating around here, and I recall, you know, I recall, you know, like when people would say, I watched the Olympics the other day when it first came on, and all the nations paraded out, and they all had their flags. You know, they were representing currently flags. And we recently just witnessed in the last year where they was tearing down these old symbols, as they call them. They call them... what they call that flag, the Confederate flag,
yeah.
Also the statues of their generals and people that held us in slavery and things like that, and they all were symbols. And people was wondering why, some people was asking, you know, why tear them down, because, you know, this is part of our history. But see, but there was also a symbol to us, especially Black people. It was very offensive to us. You know, that y'all can highlight people who did such harm to us. And we all supposed to be American. And when we were talking about this, these symbols, how powerful symbols are, you know, because if subconsciously, like my brother said, affirmation, our children, for instance, they can go into any of the, you know, children home, or course they even teach it in schools, you know, all of these things that you see. You see the Buddhas, you see the Jesus on the wall, you see a lot of things on there. And sometimes you really don't know how that affects you. As I told you, I'm in media. You don't know how many suggestive things that they put in your head every day through commercials and everything else. But they are symbols as well. They are planting things in your psyche. And, but, you know, and I tell people, you know, y'all heard me tell a story when I was a little boy. I didn't see anything that looked like me. I'm talking in media, except for Amos and Ann. See, if I had had a flag, the symbol of the red, black, and green, and, of course, I would ask, why is that different from the stripes of red, blue, you know, the American flag? Why would that be different? And then that would have started dialogue, you know, of who we are. You know, and I can say none of us confess to be all of this or this, that. Some of us don't even confess to be Black. Some of us don't, you know, confess to be African. You know, we all have our choices. But collectively, people lump us up, and we do the same thing, too. You know, we lump people up, Asians, you know, Hispanics, and you got this and you got that, you know. And so, like I say, we imbue with this, like my brother said, you know, because, you know, this is the way we've been taught. But I'm just making a strong suggestion that, you know, we start taking some of these, you know, symbols as affirmations and put them in your homes, and your children will ask questions and stuff. Because if we don't teach them, who will? Because what they're being taught is not too cool. And we all know this, because we have a lot of teachers on here who teach our young people. But they need to see something about us other than slavery. You know, and this, that, and I appreciate, I mean, seriously, I appreciate all the things I see through Black History Month. But how come they don't show that stuff in January, April? I'm talking about us. This not coming out. I'm talking about us. You know, we wait till this one month that we put all this wisdom and knowledge of what we did, why we did it, and who did it. But, you know, our young people need to know this. Now, even I know, because I didn't know all this stuff. Of course, you know why. They hid it from us. They don't want you to know your true strength and your true power. And so, my brother, you know, before you go, you're not going, I hope you don't go anywhere, because we're going to have a dialogue. People come in and they chime in. They may want to ask you some questions on your thoughts. But, again, you know, like I say, I'm always a student. And some things we take for granted. And just like a small thing, and it's not a small, it's a great thing, a symbol of who we are, a positive symbol, not what they show in the history books. We out there in the cotton field. That's a symbol too, ladies and gentlemen. When they show you those pictures and tell our children, this is where you come from. That's it. They don't take it no further than that in our history books. And so, Brother Bill, I appreciate you, man. And I'm going to open up, you know, we're going to have a little discussion on some other things. But anybody want to ask Bill or want to make a comment on this subject matter?
Yeah,
this
I do, child,
yes, sir. Come on in, bro.
First and foremost, thank you. And thank you, Brother Curtis. But let me just say something about symbolism. But he mentioned Marcus Garvey, what made me really want to say something. It's a short story that everybody should read called The Boy Who Painted Christ Black by Henry Clark. And that's a good piece in terms of just how important symbolism is, right? So everybody should read that little short story. But what I wanted to say, because when I was listening to Brother Bill, and he mentioned Marcus Garvey, you know, last night Paul Coates had Marcus Garvey's son on Zoom with quite a few other book publishers and bookstores, because, you know, they pushing the whole concept in terms of trying to get a pardon for Marcus Garvey. So there's a petition online. If anybody hadn't signed the petition, people should try to get to it and sign that petition in terms of just trying to get a pardon for Marcus Garvey, right? So, I mean, you know, since he mentioned Marcus Garvey, you know, I just didn't want to miss that opportunity and not talk about what happened last night in terms of Paul Coates and them and having to Marcus Garvey's son on to even speak, right? And all of us, you know, just like Bill said, you know, for myself, you know, I like to say Marcus Garvey, look, is the grandfather of Pan-Africanism and everything else, because, you know, it had never been nobody hit the continent that I'm aware of that was able to do what Marcus Garvey done in the time that he lived, the short time that he lived. And this brother connected millions of black people throughout the world together and created all kinds of businesses and entities, you know, and created the symbolism for a lot of us to see the importance of it. So I just wanted to say that, Dave, because I know we don't have much time and other people on, but I wanted to thank our Brother Curtis for bringing that up. And I certainly didn't want us to leave here and not know that is a petition that's placed in reference to trying to get a pardon from Marcus Garvey.
Yeah, Bill, I was on the call last night, too. And, you know, I was very impressed. You know, they had almost over 340 people on that Zoom call. That was the largest Zoom call ever been on. And like I say, most of them were book publishers and bookstores. So we still have books. Yeah, and it's still a lot of books, you know, retailers and stuff out there, and it done me good, because just to see that type of unity, and of course his son was on there, and he spoke very eloquently about his father, you know, the reason why, you know, and how they, how would you say, jacked him up the way they did in that court system, you know, and they still doing it today to us, you know, that's, you know, but you know, it's just things, like I say, seem like you know, we took a couple of steps forward, but systematic, we have went several steps backwards. Like me and Bill were talking about, Bill Curtis I'm talking about, we're talking about on that interview, but how powerful them brother was back in them days. You know, most of them guys was millionaires going on that time, Mr. Payne's and the Haybirds and all of those. And we were talking about the black supermarkets that we had, that he was even involved with, you know. And I mean, you know, we had all of this thing. And then I can even go further back than that. When Pennsylvania Avenue, right off on Division Street, there was a hospital owned by us, Providence Hospital. you know, up and down the avenue, we had all these types of schools. You know, I mean, you know, and now, you know, like I say, we were taught by us, and we were disciplined by us, too. You know, like I say, back in my time, you know, teachers, you know, they can, you know, y'all, they call it abuse today, but, you know, they would take a little ruler or something or paddle and jack you up every once in a while. You got out of line. So would your neighbors. Would nothing be said either. Matter of fact, if you said something, you got another whipping from home because you did something. And so, but, you know, a lot of things that we had let go, and then they had put laws to tell us how to discipline our own children. Your children now can have you locked up. They can have you locked up for discipline. And if they get angry with you, that's the power of the law that they put up against us. And you know back in the days, I'm talking about simple, you know, little things like this. Even with those of us, even though it was hard times for us, even when you were going to social services, you had to, the man had to go. They separated the families. And they still separating the families, pitting the women against the men and everything else. And I don't mean to step on nobody. Please don't misunderstand me. But, you know, they had in their plan, I forgot who said it, and it's in there. I forgot who said it. It was somebody well known. And they say they would even have plans to turn out men into women. And I'm not getting in that debate, what's this or what's that. But I can tell you this. During my times coming up, you know, I know things was in the closet, but you know, but it's fashionable now. You know, like me and Bill talk about this sometime, because they work together. They have seen they have more power than we have now. You better not say something against a gay or something or a person like that. You know, our arms go up, but you can kill us in the street. It's okay. It's just fine. You know, but say something wrong with that, then it's a problem. That's how much power. And all of this power came because of we have marched. We have been out in the street. We have been bitten by the doves and shot and killed and hung on trees and everything like that. And after we fought for these countries, like I mentioned earlier, picked up guns to defend them and their causes. And next thing you know, this is what we come back to, what my father had to come back to, what they did to him. You know, I'm still kind of bitter about that, but that was the sign of the times, and you know, and then it passed out because it happened to me as well. And I, you know, but, you know, it's the mindset, and that's why it's so important to have certain symbols in your home, certain reminders, certain affirmations that to remind you who you are and whose you are as well. You know, those of you who say you're Christians and everything else, you know, we wear our crosses with pride because it's a symbol. You know, our Afrocentric brother, you know, we wear things, you know, we show up on certain things that we truly believe in. But I'm going to say this, symbols are important, and that flag is a powerful symbol, and it's something that can unite regardless of what your religion is, regardless of what organization you belong, you know, and it does represent something other than slavery. And so anybody else would like to chime in on this conversation before we move on?
Yes, Lord, I would. Dr. Nyla Ali, how y'all doing this evening?
Great. Hold on. Yeah, go ahead.
I'm excited about the conversation that you're having, speaking about the symbols. I thank everyone for what they're saying. But the most important thing that we have to realize is who we were before we came to United States of America. I appreciate everything that everybody is saying and how we look at all that has been done, but who were we before we came here? Nobody, you know, our black people, I pray for our people because we really don't want to believe that we was royalty before the slavery. You don't want to, they don't want to believe that they was kings and queens. Nobody focuses on our people of who we were before coming here. And that is what God has called me to do. I have all the pictures of Black King Solomon. I have Black King David. I have the kings and queens. And let me just say something about our black people. And nobody wants to believe it because all the Christians have been taught that the people over in Israel, the Khazars, who leaning against the wall is God's Jews and his chosen people. They're not. We are. I've been studying it for 11 years now. Now God has told me to reveal this information, and I'm going to our kids, teaching our kids to dress like kings and queens. I don't care nothing about Gucci and all Louis Vuitton, Not all we doing is spending our money making other people rich. We need to have our own rural clothes in our own neighborhood, speaking about who we are, where we came from, and where we can go. As long as people are thinking about slavery, as long as you're thinking about you was in a cotton field, I don't want to talk about the cotton field. I want to talk about that I came through the bloodline of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. We talk about the Bible. But you got to realize that we came from royalty. We are the tribe of Judah. Nobody wants to, I don't understand our people. I've been speaking about it, and it's like people just shuck it off like it's nothing. You don't even want to believe that you're a true king, that the blood, that we are the, listen, we are the bloodline of King David, King Solomon, and Christ. Christ is from the line of Judah. Do you know that we are the slaves that came on the slave ship? And it is known, the maps are out there, that the Negro land is where our people came from. Our people got on those ships because we are the tribe of Judah. We are the chosen ones. We are the ones that was put on that ship. And you know, one night I was in my bed crying. I said, Lord, why do they treat us like this? Lord, I was fine when I was in the Christian church all of them years, but I never forget when I came out that Christian church and tried to get my business. When I tried to get my business, I realized who the white man was. That man, that I remember the banker asked me, why do you want to be on this side of town? Because I wanted to be on Country Club Road in Winston-Salem, North Carolina. Them white people did not want to get me. I recognized who I was then. We've got to recognize that we are royalty. Stop seeing yourself as at the bottom of the totem pole. We are not at the bottom of the totem pole. We got to lift our head up, you know, white Jesus with the blue eyes. Black people still think Jesus is white with blue eyes and blonde hair. And when I know, I got pictures of the last Christ, and all of these pictures are in Russia. Do you know we in the United States are the only people who believe that Jesus is white? Jesus, I told my mother, Mama, take that white Jesus down. I remember... You got to know who you are. You are the chosen ones. You are from the tribe of Judah. We went through Egypt. We lived in Egypt. We the one who went through the Red Sea. Our people went through the Red Sea. Lift your head up high and know that you royalty. And I'm talking about our generation. We are the ones who are going to have to lead our children. As long as our children see us down and out and beggarly, can't hardly make it measly, No. They need to see us. When you walk out your door, you need to look like royalty. Walk out your door with your head high. Don't hang your head down. You came from the tribe of Judah. You are God's chosen one. I said, Father, why they treating us like that? Let me tell you something. I was in my bed crying like a baby, and I know when I hear the voice of God. And he said, go to the book of Jeremiah. And it says that I'm going to put you on a ship. It's in there. You know, I read my Bible for 30-some years, and no pastor never told me these scriptures that God gave me that night. I got them all written down. He says, you're going to go on ships, and they're going to take you to a sea, and they're going to put chains around your neck. They're going to buy and sell you. It's in your Bible. Open up your Bible and read it, because guess what? We are them same people right here today. And nobody want to believe it. People want to turn their head, don't want to listen. Okay, don't want to listen. My thing to you is you're going to find out one day that Jesus is black. His son is black. God, Yah, is black. I ain't even know that the word Yah was in the Bible, and I found it. People don't want to believe it because we're so fixated on what we was taught as kids. But I got the symbols, all of them. And they from, guess what? They in Yale University. They in Stafford. They're in all these white colleges, and we have all the books, and we have it all to prove to you that we are the tribe of Judah. We are the ones that came on that ship, and we went to the Caribbean. We went to Brazil. All of those black people are God's chosen one. And guess what? He coming back for us. He told Paul. He told him, don't go. He said, don't go to the Gentiles. He said, go to the lost sheep of Israel. We are the lost sheep of Israel. We are the 12 tribes. I'm sorry.
Okay, Dr. Ali, I appreciate that.
Can I hug on you, lady? Can I hug you? You just make me feel some kind of good. I feel like I'm happy as a runaway slave since you put that on there. Listen, Dave.
Yes, sir, Dr. Pender, go ahead, sir. Yes, sir.
A while back, remember you all were discussing who you were. Were you colored? Were you black? Were you African-Americans and so on and so forth? Y'all have Duke open the Bible up. And there's only two tribes. There's only Jews and Gentiles. We were the Ebus, the first one that was born here to America.
Thank you.
We are the original Hebrews. Hitler even came here and told America,
said,
so you
Hitler
got
said
the real,
they went out black and came back white.
You got
Hitler,
the real Jews
Time Magazine.
In slavery. And what happened? We're educated fools, as the gentleman said. We've been miseducated for years. The only thing we're educated for is to keep them rich, but keep us ignorant. Once you begin to understand the Bible, that's your history book. Look in the 28th chapter of Deuteronomy. It also have where we came in here on ships. All of this, your history is right there in front of me in the Bible. You can read. Look, the highest educated person in the world is one who opens up his Bible and read it every day. That is your history. Amen.
All right. Okay. I appreciate that, Dr. Pender and Dr. Ali. But let me say this, ladies and gentlemen. We have a lot of people on here. We're going to see if we had to make a comment, make about a couple of minutes. I appreciate that, so everybody get a chance. But, yes, I appreciate the history. And see, that's why God always raises people up like a Bill Curtis, a Bill Gooden, and a Dr. Ali. You know, he brings so many of us together that had this wisdom and this knowledge. And so, like I say, I keep saying, from where I sit, you know, there's no more excuses for us. But, you know, the only thing is, though, you know, the wisdom that you share, you're sharing on here tonight. You know, most of the world don't hear this. Most of our children don't know this, and it's up to us to take it out into the world and share it with them, you know, and because, like I say, you know, if you don't know, you don't know. You will continue to do the same thing you've been doing. And remember, I keep saying that we own less than 1% of the media. Even though we can shout all we want to, 99% of them telling them something else.
Yeah.
That's what they're doing, and that's why it's so important to support the National Black Unity News. That's why it's so important. I'm encouraging you all to do these podcasts, and so you can educate people. You know, you can really get into, you know, sharing and telling our stories. Not the story they tell, you know, to say it's our stories. But in any case, you know, and so even those of you who are educated, it's really no more excuses now, because now you have been told that, you know, there's people like myself and many of us on here that will assist you. Because, like I say, when you do these podcasting, networking with one another, because it's not how much I know, it's who I know. Bill Kurtz know people. Bill Gooden know people. Dr. Ali know people. All of us know people, but we need to share our networks. Each one teach one. And it does take a village. You know, we need to go out there as a village, and, you know, but then again, that's why I'm going to say it over and over again, that's why by divine inspiration, the National Black Unity News came to be, is because it brings people like yourselves on here who have so much powerful information that we can share with the world. So I appreciate each and every one of y'all, man, because like I said, y'all some powerful, powerful people, man, like I say, but it's going to take us to help us. And so anybody else would like to chime in? Just give it a few minutes.
You know I'm coming.
Yes, Ms. Fran Allen.
Good evening, everybody. Good evening, everybody. Dr. Ali. Girl. Boy, you inspire me. You inspire me. Thank you so much. Girl, get on the rooftop, the mountaintop, the treetops, and keep screaming it, baby. Keep doing it. Look, y'all, when I was a little kid, my grandmother had a cross with Jesus hanging on it above her bed. That cross was on the wall above her bed before I was born. Okay? I'm going to be 65 next month, and I don't care about the number. I got a whole lot of friends that didn't cross over. So 65 is a great number to be, and I'm still young, and I'm still fine, so take that. But that cross over my grandmother's bed, I would look at it, and I would always be confused because I would go to the church that my aunt would take me to, and they have Jesus on the wall in there too, but he was white, blue eyes, blonde hair. Then I'd come home, and I'd say, but who is that above Mama's bed? Because he was black with woolly hair and dark skin. But he was on the cross. And I was like, Grandma,
that's not Jesus. And she smacked, you know, she smacked
yeah.
me. She smacked me. She popped that head. She was like, girl, that is Jesus. I don't know what you're looking at in the church, but that's Jesus up above my bed. See, I was a little teeny thing, and I remember two things. I remember Jesus was a black man, and if I said anything different, I was going to get knocked out. That's what I remember from being a little kid, all right? So my grandmother made sure that we knew that, you know, we weren't leaning on and trusting in and believing in and receiving the word of and depending on the promises of some white man with blonde hair and blue eyes hanging on some sticks. Come on, y'all.
Well, actually, the white Jesus, is Cesar Bojé, who was painted by Michelangelo, and his name is Cesar Bojé. That's who he is.
I understand. What I know is that he's not Jesus.
Amen. That's right.
So, to get with the symbolism, okay, now, I have seen, we wear all this jewelry. We got earrings that are, you know, the clenched fist. We got brothers wearing chains with a clenched fist at the bottom of that. We got people wearing the natural hair up in the workplace. We got folks wearing African garb with patterns and red, black, and green colors. And you know, when the brothers come to work, they give each other dap. They'll shake the white man's hand, but they give each other dap because we do different with each other than we do with other people. We speak a different language. When we come in the morning and we see those people that don't look like us, we might say, good morning, good afternoon, or, you know, how you doing? But when you see somebody that looks like us, it's what's up, how you doing, you know, what's happening. They can't get with that. They can't get with that. The music is different. When you sit at your desk, some of us is playing spiritual music. Some of us listen to gospel music. Some of us listen to jazz. The rest of them, they're making us turn it off because they say it's not professional to have that kind of music playing in the workplace. But when they leave the workplace and go to the other place, that's what they're listening to. See, it's all about trying to center us in that mm-hmm. moment to make mm-hmm. them comfortable at our mm-hmm. expense.
Mm-hmm.
Don't fall for the okie doke. Don't let them hoodwink you. All of that is another effort to control how we think and how we feel about ourselves and how we act and react to and around each other. So it's absolutely true. You know, our choices have always been censored to make them comfortable at our expense. And it's time that we, Dr. Ali, it's just like you said, it's time for us to stop letting somebody else tell us the message and go in search of the information on our own. See, when you learn something well enough to teach it to somebody else, you don't mind opening up your mouth.
Exactly.
You hear somebody else telling you some stuff and you don't know whether it's nonsense or it's you don't know what it is because you haven't gone in search of the information for yourself. Stop waiting for other people to tell you the story. Don't wait for somebody that don't look like us to tell you the story because they can't tell you the story. How are they going to tell us our story?
Exactly.
Go read for yourself. David said it the other day, you know, if they ever wanted anything to hide anything from black people, they just put it in print because we don't read.
Can I
look at all these black authors? We ain't reading. We writing everything. We ain't reading. Come on, really? You know, that's ridiculous.
Okay.
Well, you know,
sister was talking about the gospel music.
All right, wait. Okay, let me do this. Hold on, everybody. Let me do this. I'm gonna bring Trudy in next to Dr. YT's, and then we're gonna take it from there. Come on, Trudy.
How do you raise your hand in this thing? How do I?
You gotta go to the floor. Go
see
the more at the bottom.
I just waved my hand.
I just,
okay, Trudy, go. Come on, let's be courteous to the sister and let her speak. Please.
Yeah.
Come on, Trudy.
How's everyone doing? And you know, every time I try to turn my head, it keeps going back into the same direction. What I've gotten from the conversation so far is that, and I'm just going to hit some points, indoctrination, subliminal messages. We are desensitized to our own selves. When you start looking at Black psychology, where did we disconnect? If you're talking about originally where we started, then when we get here, it becomes a race issue. Now, Dr. King and all of our forerunners or predecessors or however you want to call it, they tried to take that message. Now we're talking about 40 or 50 years where we just lost who we were. So in the words of Mr. Murphy, I would like to say that if it's not us, then who? And if it's not now, then when? This is a task that the National Black Unity News should do. You're right. Black history can't be February. We have so many scientists, authors, professionals, doctors, lawyers. Let's start highlighting our own people. Take it into, they took the Confederation and all of those symbols down. Where is our symbols? And the paper, the periodical paper movement is an opportunity for all this brain power to get together in a collection, be cohesive, and put the message out. I don't care if we have to talk about, you know, who did something in February. We don't have to go back to the 1900s. Who did something in February, March, April, May, that are still alive, that are still, that can be rewarded, that can be historically, you know, where people can understand. That'll start to connect the dots of us to the millennials, because they don't know nothing about anything that we grew up with. People don't even eat together anymore. They don't even talk to each other. You're in one room texting the person in the other room. You know, I mean, we have lost our way, and this is the opportunity that I feel like we can take advantage of, even if it is a small step. But I think the opportunity is here, and it's a call to action. Open our mouths. We got authors. We write. Speak like screaming from the rooftop, like Fran said, scream it, tell it. It's our story, and nobody is going to do it for us but us. And I'm done.
All right. Thank you. Dr. Ortiz.
I almost forgot what I was getting ready to say. But anyway, I was about to say, when I was 18, I was in a class at Morehead University, but I was working for the Uniform Crime Reporters, the campus police officers. So they found out that I was a good statistician. So they sent me to Towson State University to work with some of the young people there. So I would go in early in the morning, and I'm a gospel person. I would get in my office, and I would turn my gospel music on. I got in there a couple of mornings, and they started coming down saying, "Why you got this on?" I said, "Why are you in my office?" "Well, you have that noise." I said, "What's noise to you is a pleasure to me. And if you want me to do this job, then I'm going to stay here and play my music." They got pissed with me, wanting to fire me. They could not fire me because I was under a different kind of contract. And it got to be hectic. But every morning I came in, I would turn my music up just a little bit louder, a little bit louder. And finally they accepted it and left me the heck alone. But they want you to do what they want you to do. They want you to play or listen to what they do. I didn't want to do that. At 18, I didn't care.
well, Dr. Ortiz, you know, as we all know, that they want to continue to do they and them, and they're going to continue, how some would say, keep their foot's on our necks. Mm-hmm. You know, because like I said, you know, in the hood, they say, never hip a lane to the game. You know, because they may come back and do something to you. And so I don't, you know, these days, you know, I see what they do. I watch what they do. Mm-hmm. I heard what they did. And it don't seem like, matter of fact, they escalate. Matter of fact, they just do it a little slicker, a little, you know, they move the pen. You know, they make laws because, you know, take care of them, you know. And right now, they don't have no problem doing things to you. Matter of fact, they're proud of it. You see what they just did to our country? I mean, you know, all the little things they do. But ladies and gentlemen, like I say, we hold our own power in our own hands. And, again, anybody else want to chime in before we get off of here? Because there's
people
on. Yes, sir. Come on in, Mr. Murphy.
Yes. Hello, everyone. This is Refugee Gypsy Murphy, and I'm enjoying this conversation. You guys have brought a lot to the table this evening, and my head is spinning right now. And one of the things I'm spinning is about is that, you know, when you were talking about black men with guns, it triggers something in me because I'm an old soldier, but at the same time, I remember way too many stories about our soldiers from World War One, soldiers from the Civil War. And World War II coming home. And like you said, these men had guns and they took care of them once they got home because they eliminated them. In fact, after World War II, a lot of what was being perpetrated in the community was the idea that these black folks were powerful and they knew how to kill black folks. And like you said, David, it was an amazing thing that they were the ones that was most sought after. They were truly the strange truth. And I just wanted to bring that up because that is a powerful thing and it brought back a lot of memories. And my sister, you are correct when you talk about before 1619 and before 1535. Yes, ladies and gentlemen, we are the original people and we are all kings. Individually kings and queens, but we are of kings and queens, no question about it. And so I just want to emphasize one thing, and that is, we talk about history, and I came up with this little ditty a little while ago that the idea of history is a funny thing. Most history, or most historians, were Victorians. Again, most Victorians were historians. Let that sink into how we perceive our education today. They're from the Victorian era. And so with that being, you know, the premise of most of who we are as far as the educational systems that are, quote, sanctioned, that's one thing. You know, let's face it, ladies and gentlemen, we need to write our own history. We need to rewrite what the Victorians has written and make the truth be known. Back to you, Dave.
Okay, there's several people who haven't spoken yet. Brother Cliff, you would like to share something?
Well, I just want to say hello, good evening to everyone. I'm in listening mode today, so I'm just enjoying what everyone is saying right now. But I just want to say hello to everyone and keep on doing what you're doing.
All right, appreciate you, bro. Beverly Williams, would you like to say something? Okay. We got Vernon Street on here. Vernon, would you like to say something, my brother?
Yes. Good evening, everyone. I'm enjoying the conversation also. I've written down a couple of things that I just wanted to share that I heard. With the continent of Africa, so many nations and were colonized, but they said that Africa was one country, with many tribes. But when, you know, the Europeans went there, they broke it up into many countries when it was originally one continent, one country with different tribes. That was one thing that I heard. And then the other thing about the children that was in the wilderness, just in the Bible, that God gave us an example of that. Because he knew, like they were saying in the book of Deuteronomy, I think Jeremiah was the other book, that it was going to happen again. So this time we have a record of what we should do when we come out the wilderness. Don't murmur and complain so we can go into the promised land and get ourselves together and get that Joshua spirit and unify. And then the last thing that I wanted to talk about was that they're trying to forget about what happened. And that's because they don't want us to remember how evil they were. We want our children to forget that they mutilated. What kind of race could mutilate another person? Cut babies out of women's stomachs, rape men and women. You know, that was their mindset. They want us to forget how evil that is, how evil they were. And they don't want their children to know, yeah, great grandma or grandma was evil. They did this to your friend's grandparents. They don't want that out. That's all I have to say.
I appreciate that. We got Kathleen Murphy. Would you like to share something?
Thank you, David. I'm just enjoying the conversations, and that I learn each time I listen in, and I'm just appreciative to be able to be a part of it. Thank you.
Thank you. Dr. Leroy McKenzie, how about you, sir?
Good evening, everyone. Good evening. I will just kind of reiterate a little bit of what everybody else has been saying. It's great for us to celebrate this month. But as we all know, Black History is 365. It's not just, you know, it's not just 28 days that we have. And honestly, the teaching of our history begins with us. It begins with our families. It begins with us telling the next generation about those that have come before us, just as the generation before us told us about who we are and everything like that. So it's, you know, it's great for me to be able to learn some of the things that I did not know, you know, about our history and the things that I've come across in reading and all of those things. So I've been kind of purposeful in this month of February trying to do and learn those things that we don't normally hear about. I'm doing this thing about the speeches that changed our culture. Some of them we've heard before. Some of them, I don't think many people have heard about them, but those were things those are speeches that I believe that touched all of us, or should touch all of us, and that should be learned, that should be heard about us. So this is another conversation that I enjoy. I'm enjoying, and it's much needed, and I'm just glad to be a part of it. And with that, I'll yield the mic.
Okay, and there's another young lady that is a new editor, and I didn't mention Dr. Ali is becoming a new editor, and we have Shauna out of Cleveland is the person that's my owner. She's a newspaper publisher, and Shauna, would you like to share? You have to unmute yourself. Okay, right, moving right along. If you want to chime, just chime on in. Then we have Ruth Smith. Yeah, Bill Curtis. Okay, I'm gonna get to he spoke already, and but I'm gonna get to him. Ruth Ministry, would you like to say something?
Good evening. Good evening. God bless everyone. I'm just enjoying what's going on tonight. I know that God is in the midst of us, and I was just looking at something where I just read about 28. You know, the 28. They gave us 28 days to celebrate our Black history, which we know is more than 28 days. But we can celebrate on the fact that there's 28 Old Testament writers. There's 28 for the name of the Lamb of God when Jesus took away the sins of the world 28 times in the Bible. And the word hallelujah is 28 times. So what the devil meant for bad, we could always turn it around for good. But just don't celebrate just 28 days of Black history. We should be able to celebrate that history every single day, because we're alive to be able to even be able to talk about what we've been through. But let's talk about where we're going. That should be our focus, where we're going. Because we keep looking back at where we've been, then we're never going to get to where we got to go. So let's just keep moving forward.
Okay. All right, Shauna, you want to chime in? You got your hand raised.
Yes, yes. I am enjoying the conversation, and a lot of what was said was much of my inspiration for starting the project that I'm working on. But like the guy just said, you know, I run into a lot of information with even my own background being Native just here in America with no residues or findings of slave ships or, and I, you know, I ponder a lot, like, why do we have to pay for family trees or why do we have to do the research when we are documented here? And I follow the reparation stories. And I guess I just wonder, like, why, now that we know so much about a thing, what's the move? You get what I mean? Do you get what I'm saying? It's like we know these things, but why is it even so difficult to come up with a plan to make a move? And that's kind of where I ponder when I hear, you know, people just saying many of the things I've come across in study, and I'm a vigilant you know, just information person, study and have access to a lot of resources and come up with a lot of different concepts. But that's something that really sits on my spirit. Like, what is the move? Because it's definitely time, and it needs to be done or set in motion before the smaller children become adults. I think we're working with time now, and they only have like 10 or 20 years to put something, you know, lifelong into place or whatever action is supposed to be taken. But it's really weird, you know, to even go talk to local, you know, people who are in position, and they're just holding this thing together. They see the same problems, but nobody has, you know, a sure solution. It's all what we need to do, but it's like we got the tools to do it. So what is this thing on us, you know?
Well, there's an old saying, Shauna, many are called but few are chosen, even the chosen ones, only a few will go. And so, you know, and so these are the folks on here that's willing to take a stand. Not only are they standing, but they have track records of making changes. But unfortunately, like I keep saying, the majority of us, get their information from outside resources. And a lot of people, because they have been indoctrinated and they are truly convinced that they are what people say that they are. And they do what people tell them to do. You know, you can enslave people, but, you know, there's a saying, you can't enslave the mind. But once you enslave the mind, that's a problem. That's a serious problem. But even that in time can be changed as well. Because, you know, we have choices in life. So even you, like I was telling you, even you, you could have sat back and complained and say, well, I'm not going to do nothing because nobody else is doing anything. But yet you taking a stand. You stood up. You started a newspaper. You're going up against government. I said you're going up against a giant. You're going up against government, public officials, and everything else. You a young lady, and you ain't got no army behind you. But you do now. You know, you got an army of us right now. See, that's a start. And each one of us can teach one, as I said before, and each one of us have networks. And that's exactly what we are attempting to do. Matter of fact, we are doing, not attempting. We are doing it because we are putting information out there. And but like I say, it's a step. We're on a journey. But we got, you know, we got a lot of work to do. We got all of these years of people have done, what they have done to us, what they had told us. And even us, we had what they say, and when they, you've been caught by the enemy for so long a time, they had to debrief you or something. And you know, we have to change our mindsets because we've been told a lot of things, not only by outside, but by our own people. Men have been, like I say, group ministry, we going to have this men thing. You know, men have been told, sold a bill of terrible things that, you know, how to treat our women. How we supposed to feel, you know, and we grew up believing this kind of stuff. And if you did some kind of thing, you thought something was wrong with you because we were told these things. But now we need to start telling the truth. There's one truth. And they say that truth will make you free. But you know, but who's going to tell the truth? Who's willing, bold enough to stand up? Because you know, we're in a system that don't want the truth to be told. So it's up to us. Like I said, it's up to us to tell our story. And I appreciate you for doing your newspaper. I already told you, you got my backing, and I'm quite sure a lot of people on here will support you. And Bill and Dr. Pender, I see y'all have your hands raised. And then, Fran, I'm going to start with you, Bill. You've been waiting for a long time. Well, you can unmute yourself, sir. Yeah, Bill Curtis. Unmute yourself.
Okay, what's the sister's paper called in Cleveland? I'm curious to know. Shana?
Yes.
Yeah, what's your paper called in Cleveland?
The paper?
Yeah, what's the name of it?
The paper.
That's it. The paper.
Oh, the paper.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
But how do you spell it?
PAPR.com.
The one
that'll be out is at the .com, but right now I got a page up. It's PAPR.xyz. It's just the logo and the contact information right now.
Okay, gotcha.
Okay.
Cool.
Dr. Pender, was that what you what you want to ask?
I'm gonna say this. When we get to the point, well, first of all, it's a beautiful thing that people are wanting to call and everybody's talking and have good ideas. When we get to the point, this is just a theory, when we get to the point where we can talk about what a solution is and the word they, what they don't want us to do, what they did to us, what how they're doing, we will take a great leap forward because they, I'm not surprised at anything that they do. I've looked at a lot of European history. You look at European history, put it in school. I watch this stuff on YouTube. Like today, Poland and Lithuania. Poland used to be kick-ass in Northern Europe. Kick-ass. Poland has been stepped on historically by the other European powers. I never understood that. You know, and they always would joke, the Polish jokes. I don't know if anybody ever experienced Polish jokes. I never understood that until I understood that historically they used to step on the other they. We at a point where we have, where that pronoun does not come out of our mouth, and we catch ourselves when it comes out, and we put a rubber band around our wrists, give yourself a pop, and bring it back to what we're trying to do, like right now. Because we have a whole long, we can always go down and pull out that big violin about what they did. They will continue to do what they do.
Yes, sir.
That is what they do. And we need, you know, we need to stop looking for they to give us a break. Ain't no breaks coming from they.
They're going to continue to do it.
It's going to have to come from us. It's going to have to come from us. That's
yes,
all.
Sir.
That's what we can
do. Dr. Charles Pender, then Frank.
Like to say something. If we were individually look at our purpose, the only purpose that we have here on the planet Earth, and collectively, if each one of us were to pursue and pray to overcome the most vile, foul enemy that's been placed in us since we've been born by the enemy, is called contempt. In all of his tentacles, once you overcome these things and understand what it does, then we would become liberated. And only then will we become liberated because they planted that seed in you years ago. Essence of it, it's destroying us. And that's why we can't commingle. That's why we can't pull together in committees and so on and so forth. We say, we're going to do this, we're going to do that. But that contempt is always there. Once you pray and eradicate this thing, get it under control, then we can go somewhere. I've been in the SCLC and meetings all over the United States, And it's always there. They planted the seed early. So when I begin to appreciate you as an individual and respect you as an individual, that contempt goes away. And it's always there. But listen, I'm praying for the best, for the betterment of us all, because to have us amalgamated ourselves together, it's a miracle. You normally don't have this happen. This is a blessing. So I'm praying for the entire unit that we get our act together, pray that contempt will go away in some kind of way, shape or form, and then we'll be liberated. Thank you.
Okay, I see Fran got her hand up.
I think that the most important thing that has to happen is that we have to get past ourselves. You know, because when you have organizations that come together with the intention or with the express purpose to create unity and then create programs and resources to help, you know, our people and to educate our children, it's great when it starts out, but then we get to that place, just like Dr. Pender said, we start to have contempt. Well, you know, somebody wants to do something and we have a different idea of how it should be done. So now we have contempt for that person because they're not doing things the way we think they ought to do it. Instead of just saying, what is my part of that process? And let me go do my part of that process so we can keep the ball rolling. Stop worrying about who's making all the decisions, because at the end of the day, we all can't make all the decisions, but we can all do our part. And that's what we should really be doing, our part, our part. So let's be busy about that. Let's find that little slice of the pie that we can do and then get busy and do that. You know, it's just like Bill Curtis said, you know, we're talking about they. Well, okay, you can't discount they, because they, you know, they burn down, they bomb churches, and they burn down whole communities, and they order the death of individual people, and then they pay folks to go carry it out. They do all those things, but those things that they do still cannot stop us from doing the one little thing that we need to do that keeps the ball rolling.
Okay, let me say this. Dr. Ali, I'm going to bring you right in. But you know something? I don't know about the rest of y'all. Like I said, I could only account for myself. Now, I could say I'm the great this, I'm the great that, but I know the truth about me. That's one person I cannot hide from. I may, you know, God gave us a powerful thing. He gave us choice. And God knows I made some terrible choices in my day. If it was left up to me, the choices that I made, man, I... It's lucky I'm still here. And so why would you put so much stock into your mentality sometimes that, you know, you the stuff, you know this is my way or no way, that kind of attitude, when you know for a fact that you have made some terrible choices. And you have to understand that other people made some bad choices too. So we all in this boat together. But like Fran said, we have to get that me out the way sometimes. Yes, you are an important person. You can change your mind. You can see that's the power of your choice. But you also have to understand that you're not the wisest egg in the whole dozen or something because like I say, on your past history. Now, collectively, if we open our minds to our brothers and our sisters and listen to them, and we share information, and this is where the collective coming at. You know, everybody, we would never agree 100% on everything. None of us will. But for the greater good of yourselves and the greater good of us, we know nobody's going to do it for us. It's going to have to be us. So we're going to have to get in this mindset that we have to think collectively and be honest about it. You know, you're going to have to, like I said, because Fran, you got some information, Dr. Ali got, so all of y'all have such great information. Now, collectively, I absorb these type of things. And because I don't know it all, but you know, like I said, I have children and I have grandchildren. And, you know, they ask a lot of questions. You know, a little bit, why, what for, how come? You know, children ask you these things. And they're expecting an answer. So collectively, because since I don't know it all, so I take a little piece from Bill Gooden, a little bit from Bill Curry, a little bit from Fran Allen, because these are things I don't know, but I do know one thing. When your heart is in the right place, and when you have that thing in you that you want to share and you want to give and you want to help us as a people, you know we hurt. You know you can make contribution. So make your contribution. You can't do it all. I can't. None of us can do it all by ourselves. We know now. We don't. If we don't know nothing by now, you got some work to do on yourself. But collectively, we are the answer. It's up to us. No more, like I said, we have to put down that I, me, myself, I'm the stuff. And you are the stuff now. You know, your own stuff. You that. But at the same time, when it comes to we and us, we're going to have to do some serious work. And that's why, and I'm going to say this, and I'm going to let somebody else try. Dr. Owley, I'm going to come right back to you. But I do know this. And when I say this, and I say this with all sincerity, and when I say this publication comes by divine inspiration, so it's not a Bill Gooden or David Murphy thing. I didn't put this thing together. I don't think like that. But you know, I do know, but I see the results. Because each one of you are here now. Y'all saw the vision, and you shared in the vision. You see, and I tell you this all, only God to bring a group of people like yourself here. See, this is different from most groups. I'm going to tell you this first, and I've been in many of them over the years. I sat down with every kind of social, militant, every kind of group. I sit amongst them. And like you said, because we couldn't get that eye out the way, nothing really happened. I'd sit down, me and Cripple Old Buffers, we'd sit down with a multitude of people because if they wasn't the head man in charge, it wasn't going to happen. I'd sit down in Emersonville community when I tried to get all the churches together, the community association. Every last one of those groups had if I wasn't the head man in charge, and this, it's an illness that's stumbling block that's killing us. And it's that eye. But then again, what we have witnessed, and this is a sign and wonder as far as I'm concerned, only God can bring people like yourself together with hearts like yours. People really care. This ain't nothing y'all just came up with. Y'all been doing this pretty much all your lives, individually. Now, I see the power of each and every one, but can you see the power of us now? All of you, collectively. Look how strong we are, how passionate we are about us. And neither one of us don't have to do nothing for nobody else. You can look up on your own tail and say good night. That's it. And live happily ever after, but you won't. You know you won't because it's in you. You can't sleep at night unless you're doing what you need to do to help us. You can't sleep if you know your brother's suffering. He's hungry out there. A lot of people can, but not you all. And so just as I say, some people are called and some people are chosen. But again, and I think that's why God brought together, because all of those things that y'all say we are, and all of those things say that we can do, yes, we can do. But you know, we just have to do a little work, and we're doing it through the National Black Unity. It's a first step. But you know, each one of you have visions, and this is not to take the paper, just to take your individual thoughts and put it out there collectively. But each and every one of you has such a massive vision, and all of it's needed in the community. It takes the village. You know, we have to have all of y'all and all of the things that you do to make this thing whole. And so, Dr. Ali, I'm going to close out with you.
Glory to God.
Okay.
The most important thing to me is unity. We have to stay unified. We have to look at the positive and alleviate the negative. We have to stay on a straight and narrow path. Those of us on this call tonight, we have to walk together on a straight and narrow path, not look to the left, not look to the right, but keep your eyes on the vision. We've been in slavery for 400 years. The 400 years was up in 2019. It is our season and our time. I don't look at negative stuff. I don't have time for it because it can bring you down. It can drag you down. Watching all that negative news, watching this, how many people dying, how many people this. Listen. Watch the news. When you watch the news, pray about it and move on. You can't fill your spirit man up with so much negative and think you're going to produce anything. When you're weak, broken down from listening to everybody's woes, when you are a prayer warrior, take it to the Most High. We cannot change anything. God can change it. Pray. Seek the Most High. When you have something on your heart, when you, if you listen to the news and you just listen to it and don't do anything about it, why are you listening to it? You're taking all of that negativity in and you're oozing it out to other people when you get around them and talk to them. So what I want to say is we must unify. Speak on those things that be not as though they were. We must speak positive. We must talk to one another. We must build one another up. And let me just say this. We can't save the whole world. God puts a circle here, a circle there, a circle here, a circle there. Wherever he has unified you at, stay with that unit and get the work done. And the thing, Mr. Murphy, that I spirit is straight from the pit of hell. It's not I, it's we. We must unify as one. We are one together. And when you are in these groups, stay with it, stick with it. I stayed with my church for 30 years. And everybody, girl, you still go, I'm not moving. When you are a part of something, you don't walk away from it. You stick team, everybody on the call, that we should pray for each other. Are we calling each other's name out every day? Father God, help sister this. Help Brother Murphy. Pray that our eyes be open. You see, the word of God says in these visions, pray that the eyes of our understanding be enlightened, that we may know what is the hope of our calling, that we be not conformed to this world, but we be transformed. We are not of this world. We are here to produce for those to come. Our generation right here, we are called to do a work for those to come, the children that are coming behind us. Now, I can't say that I'm very heartbroken because I feel like our generation right here, that after us, people sort of left believing in the Most High. They believe in what they see. And it's so hard that children are having children and young children are having more children, that it keeps going on and on. But it's our responsibility as a whole to bring them back in. How are we going to do that, guys? With the newspaper, with the podcast, speaking and teaching. And the most important thing is prayer. Prayer. And faith without works is dead. Once you pray, let's get up and move and be soldiers and support each other in whatever they're doing. Whatever we're doing, we should know and pray about it. We should have a prayer list, maybe. We can put a prayer list together with everybody's name and what they're doing and pray for people. The Bible says pray without ceasing because prayer changes things. So my thing is unify, stay together, and pray. That's all I can say is pray, pray, pray. Because the world is always going to be here, guys. This world is, and you have to realize about those other people. You know, I heard this white lady say the other day, she says, yes, I want to wear my hair like yours. I want your lips. I want your eyes. I want my nose. I am so jealous of you, and I want to be just, we all want to be you. She said, black people, wake up. We want to be you. Those who don't want to be us, they stamp on us. They press on us. They hate us because we are the chosen ones. And guess what? It's nothing nobody can do about it. God is here. Share your heart with the Lord. Get serious with him. And I promise you, he's going to change our footsteps right here. We can make a difference in this circle right here. In Jesus' name, I love you guys.
All right. Mr. Michael Thomas, unmute yourself, sir.
You are unmuted.
Thank you. Thank you. Once again, greetings, everyone. I see a wealth of black wealth in the conversation here, just from my economic mind. And I would like to push forward to get the National Black Unity newspaper to 72 pages, get that done, and also table inviting that Marcus Garvey group to this Monday night session with a platform on the table to unify with them, and also to place the question, you know, what they have in mind as a united body in terms of reaching point A to point B or point A to point Z And when do they plan to reach the end of it? You know, the time frame, is it 1 year, 2 years, 10 years, 20 years?
Well, let me say this about that group. You know, it was a call. That was more not like an organized type of group where they just meet. This was a special call out because they doing a, by the 2nd of March is the end, but they try to say to the end of this month, they not going to exonerate. They try, you know, they kind of not pardon him, exonerate him. It's a difference in the two. And they got this campaign going to be running for the end of the month. And a gentleman here by the name of Paul Coates, who's a soldier, been around. He's a book printer. Him and quite a few other people, and Marcus Garvey's son himself organized this. And so that's their mission, is to get him exonerated. They're not collectively on, well, we have the book group. They do have a book group, but they had the publisher group. They all splintered people. Even I was on there. So it wasn't like this was a regular type meeting that they meet on a consistent basis. This is a call out. This actually is worldwide. They work in other countries too, you know, to get this thing, because they can accept children and people from other countries to sign this document to get them exonerated. And so I hear what you're saying, but, you know, there's a lot of groups out there. But only thing I say to, but you have to be extremely cautious when you're dealing with a lot of groups and organizations, because, like I say, they have their mindset and this, that. But they say, only thing, like I said, I've been in a lot of groups, Mike, a lot of organizations. We're not what you consider the organization. We're not what you can call a group or anything like that. Mm-hmm. We don't have no membership. We don't have no bylaws or anything
exactly.
Like that. We just a group of people who care about people. But now, but you know, we went as far as it because we start talking like Dr. Ali. She just came on board. But you know, and that's why I tell people, you in the paper, yes, good and fine. And yes, you collectively putting it on you, but the real magic is, the real strength is the people behind the paper. That's where the true unity is at. You see, not only do they pray for one another, they work with one another, we support one another. We generally care about one. This is more family than anything. You know. And if anybody stick around, that's why I always say stick around. Get to know us, and they get to know you. Before you know it, you'd be calling each other up. You'd be crying on each other. You'd be praying together, laughing together. We even party together. And, you know, we do a lot of things together. I mean, it's just a powerful, powerful, and like I said, only God can bring a group like this together. And so I don't know what God would call it, but I do know it's working, and I benefit from it greatly. And guess what else? And I say this again, and y'all might fight me over this. Yes, y'all come together. Y'all helping us to help ourselves. Y'all helping people. But guess who get helped the most? You do. Remember I said, I didn't say it to y'all tonight, but I said all of us got issues that we have to deal with. If it ain't happening to you, it's happening around you. And usually when you come to this group, not only do you give, but guess what happens? You end up receiving. You receive new friendships, new family members. People to come to your aid when other people that you've known all your life would never come to your aid. You got a group of people, gold in their pocket, dig deep to support one another and think nothing of it. There ain't no whole bunch of knives going in each other's backs and all of this kind of stuff. You know, all I see is love and like I said, and nobody's beholden to nobody in there. This is a volunteer thing. All this is volunteer, and that's why I say only God could assemble something like this. And only God can, I believe, only God can tear it apart, you. Because man can't do it. And because it's going to go on and on, God will remove you. Because like I say, this is by divine inspiration. And the reason why you're here is by divine inspiration, whether you believe it or not. And those of y'all who's in the Word, you know, the saying is, my steps are ordered. They truly are. And not my will being done is thy will. And so, like I say, but I do know one thing. Y'all full of love. You have a burden for our people. And that's the common bond that drives us together. But then you not only do you care about us, our people, but you've been caring about us on your individual basis. You care about our children and our children's children. I mean, if you knew the history of everybody on here and what they really do and why they do it, you would be. That's why I say that again. I am truly blessed to be amongst you. I mean, seriously, my whole world has changed because of y'all. I'm still here today, and I'm gonna share this. I'm gonna shut up. I told you I had a stroke about it last year around this time, and then I had a multitude of seizures right after that, consistently, and every time, and I was fully aware and fully awoke when these things was happening to me. I could feel the prickling on my body like needles going in and out. But the only thing is, I couldn't express, because when you have strokes, you can't speak sometimes. You just, you know, you try to get words, but you can't speak. And I would try to say to the doctor, because I had pushed that button, and they was all around me trying to do all of these different things. But then after that third or fourth seizure, I thought this was going to be my last day on earth. And of course, by me being who I prayed, I didn't pray about trying to live again. Guess what I prayed about? I said, my work is not done, and I prayed about y'all. Now, sincerely. And that was so strange. I questioned myself. I got myself together. How powerful that was. Wasn't thinking about me. I did think about my family and y'all. Of all the things, you know, I could say, Lord, save my black tail. That wasn't even in the equation. And the strangest thing was, the people that, you know, I'm in the hospital, but, you know, people on this line who were dead during that time, they prayed for me. I got this young lady on his name. I think her name was Fran Allen. She had called me up to see how I was doing. And she left a message. And, you know, she was crying crocodile tears because she heard my voice calling her. And I sit there listening to her. I mean, it broke me down. To see that kind of love, man, you know, this, and not only my brother, my sister-in-law, all of them, man, the love was so, I felt it. I felt the prayers. And that's the power of y'all, collectively. And I believe, this is my personal belief. That's why I'm still here today. We got work to do. Each and every one of them. We got some serious work to do. And it's not my will, again, it's thy will be done. And you can take it how you want to take it, but that's just my belief. But I do know this. Again, that's why it's so important, and I love it, because guess what's happening? And I ain't got into, this is a fact. You know how many collaborations are taking place right now amongst us? There's groups of forming. People are doing things together, and that's the beauty of us. You know, I mean, because I call myself a server of servants, but guess what else? I consider myself the network of networks, too. All kinds of networks are taking place. People are meeting. I mean, they really working with each other. And see, we don't know where this train is going. And like I say, there's many what you call roads that lead from what we are doing here. The paper is the foundation. It's a seed. But the things that y'all are doing, you know, with each other, and the things that you have done by yourselves, and the things that we are doing in the paper collectively, is a powerful tool. We up against a giant, because we are a giant. You talking about a David and Goliath, that's just what we in, the position we in. Y'all know the end story. If we don't tell our stories, like Bill Curtis said, you know, if we don't start putting up our symbols, who we are, what our true history are, not just talking amongst ourselves, but we got to take it to our children, and then to our grandchildren and to their grandchildren. But, you know, see, that's the starting point right there, because you put that up there, they're going to start a conversation. What's that about? And Satari's on here, too. You know, he taught my children. I used to send my children to them. And they used to come on red, black, yellow, green. I know what these colors mean. I mean, because they was taught that. And, you know, and from children, because Satari and them taught. You know, and stuff like this, and see, and they was proud of it. You know, until we become proud of ourselves again, not that, I ain't talking about that false type of pride. But I'm talking about, like what Dr. Ali talked about, who we really are. King, queen, we come from the greatest heritage there is. And so, ladies and gentlemen, I'm not going to hold you long, because I know your time is important. You know, we always have great conversations, but this is serious work. This is not a drill, I say. This is truly warfare. seen and unseen. You know, we fighting the air. You know what about the air? You know, we fighting man. And it's a lot of other things that's taking place. And I don't know the end result. I'm just trying to be obedient. And I am a soldier. Like I said, you know, I tell you, I got the battle scars to prove it. So have you all. Y'all been through a lot, and you're going through a lot, and you will go through something. Because you're breaking into something. You're breaking into old systems. You changing the diagram. Now y'all telling your own narratives now. Tell with our grandfathers, because we had a few people who could tell their stories. But now in this day of communication, everything we're doing, what we're saying right now, our great-great-grandchildren can see this podcast, what we were talking about way back hundreds of years from now. This is how powerful the media is now. And you actually are telling your stories. And that's why I say it's so important to do these podcasts. That's why I say it's so important to be involved with the National Black Unity News. This is history. You talk about Black History Month. This is history. What we're doing with this publication right now, because no other newspaper operates the way we do. It's by the people and it's for the people. This is a collaboration of each and every one of y'all. Y'all support this paper financially. You support the paper with your wisdom and knowledge. And not only that, you're willing to go out into the world and do that. Like I say, Fran and them teaching children, Kathleen and all of y'all, and y'all have ministries out here. You have businesses, cultural things. I mean, books. We got authors. We got everything we need. There's no excuse for us, none whatsoever, but it's to do it. And so, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to bid you all a good night and thank you for your input. We'll be back here next Monday. And we would also be okay. I'm gonna let you in, Satari.
Okay.
And one more thing. Tomorrow night at 7:30, that's when we do the call for the National Black Unity News, hosted by Fran. I'm talking about Kathleen Murphy, and hopefully you all get on there because we have to start showing up. I'm gonna tell you why it's important to show up, because you may bring something to that table tomorrow that somebody can greatly benefit from, and vice versa. And I interviewed one of our new editors today. Her name is Bobby Rush. She's 30 years old, and she's been through a lot in her life in her 30 years. And I told her about you, Dr. Ali. I told her about Ruth Ministries. I told her about some of the things. I said, you will connect with them so well. This young lady got so much going, but she needs y'all guidance. And she will be here, and you know, so many. I'm befriending all of you. This young lady needs y'all, and she's powerful though, but she needs women like y'all in her life. And same thing with us men. We got young 18, 22, 23 years old joining us, and they're gonna need to see. That's why I say God is bringing our young folks in. And so you know, so again, it's not all about us. You know, we got information we can share with them. But, you know, each generation, but, you know, again, it's in y'all hands. Y'all see, that's why I say this paper is about you. Without you, we don't have any paper. Y'all make the paper. And so, again, go ahead, Brother Satai, before we close out.
Yeah, I just want to say, you know, listening to everybody, this evening was really good. It reminds me of a poem that Amiri Baraka put out called It's Nation Time. And for those that don't know, Amiri Baraka was the one who named me Satawi Jai, and back when I was in the Congress of African People. But he had a poem called Nation Time, and it went a little something like this. It's time to take and put all of those me's into a big, black, mamma-jamming we. We need to hook up. And that's what we've been saying on here. To take the me's and the I's, because there's no I in team, and there's no me in team. But take those I's and those me's out of the equation, and we need to hook up. We need to hook up. And so that's all I wanted to make a comment about.
And you said that's the way we're going to close this thing. And that's exactly what we need to do. You know, we need to do what we need to do for ourselves, for us. And I'm going to say to each and every one of you, I appreciate y'all so much, man. And I'm going to say good night. Y'all take care.
Good night. Good night.
Night.
Good night.
Goodbye.
To listen to the full song and 50 million others, tap Play Full Song now to start your 3-month free trial of Apple Music.